Good evening. Thanks, everyone, for joining for Messages from the Midrash for Parshat Chukat. This will actually be our last one for Sefer Bamidbar, which is hard to believe, but next Monday night, I'll be on a plane to Israel, and thank God, and God willing, I should say. We get back like Wednesday afternoon, the 27th, so even though I'm only missing two Shabbos, I'm like gone for the better part of that. That last week, so we'll resume Parshat Dvarim, which will be the week before Tish B'Av. That's that. Parshat Chukat discusses a lot of different topics, and sometimes when picking a midrash or picking midrashim for the week, so sometimes I pick a couple of different things to get a wider scope of the parsha, and sometimes I just pick a couple of midrashim from the same topic and whatnot, or sometimes a little bit of both. But this week, I saw a few midrashim that actually kind of build on each other in an interesting way that pertain to one particular topic, but a few different angles that I think are interesting on a topic that I think we're familiar with, but nonetheless, I think we'll get a new perspective out of it. So Parsha begins by discussing the laws of the Para Aduma, the laws of the rad heifer. Somebody comes in contact with a dead body. So in order to enter the main areas of the Beit HaMikdash, so they have to be purified through the ashes of the rad heifer mixed with water. The whole ritual is discussed in the Psukim, as well as in Masechet Parah and the Mishnah. But there is something paradoxical about the Parah Aduma, and that's what we're going to explore in this Midrash. I'm trying to share my screen, and it's not letting me. This is not great. All right, I'm gonna share my this works, I guess. All right. Hopefully everybody who's on Zoom can see. Okay. All right, okay. So the parsha begins, Zot Chukat HaTorah. This is the statue of the Torah. So the word, we often contrast the words chukim and mishpatim, chok and mishpat. Mishpat is a law that we can understand the purpose of it quite naturally. Mishpatim also often referred to the idea of mishpat, carrying out justice. So let's say if we're talking about, not killing is a mishpat. So that's something that a court carries out. And it's a law that we can obviously understand. It doesn't require much explanation. Chok is something that is, I'm going to phrase it, not necessarily so easy to understand, or not humanly possible to understand. So the parsha begins, Zot Chukat HaTorah. So the Midrash relates this to the Pasuk, Zeh Shamar Katub, Mi Ten Tahor Mitameh Lo Echad. Who can produce something clean out of something unclean? Is it not one? Meaning, is it not Hashem? So it gives, the idea is, let's give some examples and then we'll see how it relates to the parsha. So it gives examples. Could go on Abraham and Terach. So Abraham, Avinu, was born from Terach. Abraham is a righteous person. Terach was an idolater. So he was something pure coming from something impure. Chizkia me'achaz. So Chizkia was one of the best kings, not maybe the best, but one of the best kings of the kingdom of Judah in the time of the monarchy before the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash, and he was descended from Ahaz. So go through this line here. So there's a king Uzziah who was a good king. Yotam was also a good king, and we know this because in Tanakh itself it says who did what was Tov b'nei Yashar b'nei Hashem, and who did Ra b'nei Hashem, who did good and who did wicked in the eyes of Hashem. So Uzziah and Yotam are good. And then after Yotam comes, and what the only thing the only shortcoming that they had was that they didn't necessarily remove Avodah Zarah. They didn't remove the Bamot, the altars of Avodah Zarah, but they themselves did not engage in that. They did not encourage it. But then after Uzziahu and Yotam comes Achaz, and there it says, Lo asa hayoshav b'nei Hashem. He did not do what was righteous in the eyes of God. And so there are a few reasons why this is. Achaz was somebody who did what the Israelite kings were doing, right? There's a king of Judah and the kingdom of Israel. So the Israelite kings, generally speaking, were terrible, did a lot of Avodah Zarah. They were heavily influenced by the culture. Achaz also passed his son in the Molech ritual. Molech ritual was like you pick up a child, you pass him over the fire. If you actually put them in the fire, pass them over the fire, but whatever it is, the Torah is very explicitly against that, and yet he did that. And he allowed Bamot to be built, and he used, there were masechot, masks that were idolatrous in nature. And he also built an altar that was similar to one that he found in Damascus after a war that he won. So he went to Damascus with the king who was on his side, who conquered Damascus, and said, I want an altar like that. So he did all sorts of things that were meant to imitate other cultures that were not in line with what was proper in the eyes of the Torah. But Hizkiah comes from Achaz. He is somebody pure coming from something impure. Yoshiyahu comes from Amon. So Amon is the son of... So after Hizkiah came Menasseh and then Amon. Menasseh was terrible, but he did Tshuva. Interesting thing. Amon was also not good. It says about Amon, he went astray from the God of his ancestors, did not follow the path of Hashem. And Malachim Bet, it says, he brought a lot of shame. There's a suggestion, Chazal, that he actually burnt the Torah. And the Gemara says that perhaps Achaz was one individual who did get Olam Haba. And nonetheless, Amon's son was Yoshiah. Yoshiah, the Tanakh is very clear, was one of the best kings. He did a total reformation, restored some of the halakhos in the Sefer Torah. There was a Korban Pesach involved that hadn't been offered in a while. So Yoshiah was a pure king who came from an impure king. And you have Mordechai, who came from Shim'i. So Shim'i ben Gera was an individual who cursed David HaMelech when he was fleeing from Absalom. Shim'i is from the tribe of Amin. And it says in the Megillah that Mordechai came from the line of Shim'i. So Mordechai was descended from somebody. Mordechai was righteous, was descended from somebody who was. And likewise, the Jewish people managed to be pure despite the fact that they are influenced or they're surrounded by the nations of the world. And likewise, there's Olam Haba that comes from Olam Hazeh. We start in this world, which is a world that's very flawed. And then we go to Olam Haba, which is something that's pure. So we can see that even when something is bad or something is disgraceful to Hashem, that there's still good that can come out of that. There's the idea in the Gemara also that dam nechar v'nasa chala, that blood which is nida blood, which is impure, transforms into milk when a woman gives birth. Not making any comments about the scientific nature of it, but that's how Midrash perceives, or that's how the Gemara perceives, how that's how Chazal perceive that blood which creates impurity can create something that is quite pure. In fact, I don't know who says this, but somebody points out that the word tame, which is impure. So if you spell out the word, the letters of Tame, Tet, Mem, and Aleph. So that, yeah, so Tet, Mem, and Aleph. So all of that will add up to 610, right? Tet is 409, and Mem is 80, and Aleph, so, et cetera, add that up, you get to 610. Gematria of Torah is 611. So Tameh turns into Torah. So you see that that which is impure can lead to can give birth to something that's good. So then the Midrash says, so Mikas Arkane, who allowed this to be? Mitzivakane, who commanded this to be? Lo Echad, is it not the one who created the world? Lo Yechidu Shel Olam, the singular being of the world. So that's the idea, is that impurity can lead to purity. So we also have this idea when it comes to tzarat, taman tina, by her kigris tame. So if you have like a penny size thing that looks like tzarat, so that becomes tame. But if the tzarat spreads out to cover literally the entire body, that person's declared tame. It just, again, it's a little bit paradoxical, but something that started as tame can turn into something that's tahor. So who allows that to be? Who allowed this to be? Who decreed this to be? Who commanded this to be? Is it not Hashem, the singular being of the world? And likewise, so if a woman, Chas v'Shalom, has a miscarriage, and a midwife were to stick her hand in to remove the fetus, so then the midwife becomes impure, but that doesn't affect the actual but just by touching it, the midwife becomes impure, but the woman itself, even with that. With the dead fetus inside, so she actually remains pure. And likewise, if hamed b'bayit, habayit tahor, if a dead body is in a home, so the home remains pure. So yatza mitocho, but once it's carried out, so then the house becomes impure. So miyasachem mitivakein miyazakazarkein, who decreed this to be? Lo efad lo yichidu sholam. Is this not the singular creator of the world? Fine. So then we have the Torah, Tamatzina, called Oski Bepar Mitchil Vatsof Mitamin Begadim. Anybody who is involved in the ritual of Par Aduma, they become impure and their clothes become impure. They become impure and their clothes become impure. And this includes kind of. So that includes anybody who's collecting the ashes, sprinkling the ashes, anybody who's involved in this process becomes impure and the clothes become impure. So how's this possible? How's this possible? Igufa, so Ella Mar Kadosh Baruch Hu, Huka Chakakti, Zera Gazarti, I decreed a rule, I made a statute, I decreed a decree, Ve'ena Tarashai Levoag Zerati, and you're not authorized to transgress my decree. In other words, what's being discussed here is that this idea that this paradox, on the one hand, in the process of purifying somebody who's impure, the kohanim become impure in the process. It's a bit of a paradox, and that's what makes it a chok. That's what makes it a little bit difficult to understand, perhaps impossible to understand, is how that's possible. You get a little bit of a hint here that that this is true of many areas in life, where something that's inherently impure can lead to purity, or something pure can come out of a process that's perhaps contaminating. And Michtav Eliyahu brings other examples of this, that averot can become schuyot, that sins can become merits if you redeem those sins into something that's positive. That shows the unity of the world. Likewise, we say by Erev Yoker Yom Echad, night was created then day. The night comes, the day emerges from the night. And likewise, a pure person emerges from this process that becomes uncontaminating, which Michtav Eliyahu shows is the unity of the world. But I think that's even though the Par Aduma is a chok, it does teach us something even things that are bad can be redeemed. We should never sort of resign ourselves to think that something that's dirty and pure, even if it's existentially so, which sometimes we might feel like there are certain things in our world that are just existentially like they're broken. How are we going to fix them? But that which is good and that which is whole can come out of that. It also teaches us sometimes a lesson that we have to get a little bit dirty in order to clean something. Best example, I guess, would be that if you have to clean up after a child, so you might become dirty. Might become dirty in the process, and yet sometimes that's part of life. That could be both physically and metaphorically. Yeah, I know people who in yeshiva who sort of question the notion of becoming a rabbi or going into outreach or the like, because it, you know, let's say you have to bring in people who aren't observant and have a sort of different culture. You have to bring them into your house, and what does that do to your family culture and the like? So, okay, so maybe for some people, that's not the right decision, but there's also an argument to be made for the fact that in order to bring Torah into the world, so we have to get out there. That's the difference between Noach and Moshe, says the Meshech Chochma, that Noach kind of stayed in his teva. He didn't go out and try to, he didn't necessarily go out recruiting people to do tshuva, but Moshe, you know, went out to his brothers, and even though he could have sort of remained cloistered with Hashem, he went out to bring people closer to Hashem. And sometimes that might be the way that you bring people into Torah, and sometimes the way to create better situations in life. But sometimes you have to kind of go out and do the dirty work in order for that to happen. So is that the reason for Parah Adumah? We don't necessarily know. We don't know why Hashem made it that the Kohanim become impure, but it certainly gives us a lesson in that regard.
I think this also relates to the age-old question of why you see tzaddikim suffering and why you see Rishayim prospering. There's no, you know, why is he prospering? He's a Rasha. Why is he suffering? It's a tzaddik.
Yeah, that is...
And there's no answer to that.
I think that is a paradigmatic chok, although not halachic chok, but in terms of theology, it's probably the biggest chok that exists. And it's, you know, it's something that's brought up by Moshe Rabbeinu, Yirmiyahu, and the like. And the answer always goes unanswered. So I think you're 100% right on that point. The next midrash points out that there's a certain yitzhar hara that comes with the fact that we don't necessarily understand things, because if we don't understand it, so what's the point? Maybe it can poke holes in the argument. And there's a certain angle that gets brought in. So Rabbi Yeshua, the Safni B'Shem Rabbi Levi Amar, Arba Dvarim Yitzhar Hara Meshiv Aleihem Uchtiv Bahem Chuka. There are four things that the evil drive would refute as irrational, and for each of them is written a chok. So the Yitzhar Hara, it wants to tell us that inherently the law is irrational, so why should I follow it? And sometimes there's also contradictions, that when the Yitzhar Hara sees contradictions, it says, you know, we got to solve the contradictions, and one is right and one is wrong, and often the one that's less convenient gets left behind. It's very difficult to live with contradicting ideas, and that's a lot of what's wrong in this world today. We've come to have a harder and harder time living with cognitive dissonance, with the idea of dialectic. But sometimes there are two things that can be true at the same time, and they seem to contradict. But that's what Rabbi Abraham Twersky says is that's the freedom of asking questions on Pesach, because we can ask questions, not necessarily have the answers of them, and still live with that. But the person who's not free has to solve all these, and that's a Yetzer Hara, says the Midrash. So these are the examples that get brought. So Eshet Ach, the prohibition of marrying the wife of one's brother. Chilaim, the mixture of substances. Sa'ir Mishtaleach, the scapegoat that's launched on Yom Kippur. Paradum is the last. So Eshet Ach, Tichtiv, Erbad Eshet Achicha, Lo Tegala. One's not allowed to marry, to have relations with one's sister-in-law. But at the same time, Mipul Banim Yivamal Yavola. But if he does without children, then he's actually, it's a mitzvah to do chalitza nowadays, as you've been learning in the daf. But in theory, there's at least permission, if not a mitzvah, for them to in fact have relations, so that the family line can continue. So some might actually say that there are other iterations where for everything that Hashem didn't allow us to do, Hashem gave us something that you are allowed to do. So this could be an example where even though certain kinds of arayos are forbidden, this is a form of arayos that's permitted. But one might also look at this and say, well, if you're allowed to do yibum, then why should I not be allowed to do the other case? It seems a little bit obscene on some level. Although the truth is, if the brother dies and they're children, so then there's no yibum. So that still kind of comes up. But still, so the Yitzhar Hara is kind of is picking up on these contradictions. When it comes to forbidden relations, right? So this is considered a cloak that there's not necessarily a logical answer to all the things related to arise. And Shilayim, when it comes to mixtures, that you're not allowed to wear wool and linen together. But when is it permitted? So if you have a material made of wood and you put linen stitches on them, or the opposite, maybe it's probably more likely that the clothing is linen but the tzitzis are wool, so that you're allowed to do. So the Torah states that there's a chok involved that you're not allowed to do kilayim, but that's despite the fact that with tzitzis kilayim doesn't apply. But that itself is the whole mitzvah of kilayim. Perhaps is a chok. We don't necessarily understand why Hashem doesn't want us to mix these things. But at the same time, the fact that there's this internal contradiction or seeming contradiction, we should say, seems problematic. Somebody who sends out the Seir Mishalech, who sends out Azazel, has to launder their clothes, they become impure. Who mechaper lacherim? But Azazel itself atones, it purifies the Jewish people. So that seems to be a contradiction. Now, how is it that Azazel can purify, can atone for the Jewish people, and yet the person who's dealing with Azazel becomes impure? This is an eternal statute. And then when it comes to Paraduma, same thing. So anybody who's dealing with the Paraduma from beginning to end, from the burning of the ashes to the sprinkling of the water, so they become impure, even though the actual ritual of Paraduma purifies the other person. This is the law of the Torah here. So you see that this comes up in other places. There are either internal contradictions in the inherent mitzvah, or just there seems to be, somebody might perceive an inconsistency and why should I follow this? This is a little bit irrational, and yet, this is a chok. This is the statute that Hashem created. Now, this midrash is ever so fascinating. So, it's the Torah says, "Bichu elecha." I should take for you a para aduma, a red heifer. So Rabbi Yosi Bar Chanina Amar like Kodesh Baruch Hu to Moshe, "Ani megalal lecha tampar." Hashem says to Moshe, I'm going to tell you the reason for the paraduma and the contradiction there. Aval lacherim chukah, but for everybody else, it's a chok. It's going to be an irrational statute, which tells us that sometimes we sometimes define chukim as mitzvah that don't have a reason, but it's not that they don't have a reason, it's that we don't know it. And in fact, Moshe Rabbeinu was privy to that reason, but he wasn't allowed to share it with everybody else.
Yeah.
So it's mishpat for Hashem, but it's chok for us. Good. So the Amar Afuna Ktiv Ki Kach Moed Ani Misharim Eshpot. It's written, for I will set a time for when I myself will judge with equity. But mishpat Eshpot mishpat. Ktiv Bayamahu Lo Yiyah Or Yikarot VeKipa On. So then it's also written, on that day, there shall be no light of cold and no light of cold and frost. So the word kipa'on has the implication of something being hidden, whereas eshpot has the connotation of the reason being a mishpat, that the reason is revealed. So the midrash explains, d'varim ha'machusim yikem ba'olam hazeh atidin liyot tzfuyim. Things that we don't know in this world will be revealed in the next. Okay, so again, there will be a time where we will understand it. It's just not necessary in this world. It might be true what you were bringing up with Yadati. It's also true. Maybe in Olam Haba, we'll get an understanding of this. But in Olam Hazda, it's not the case. Had insomnia to tafi dichtiv alach the ivrim baderech lo yadu b'tivo lo yadu adrichem. A blind person might not see in this world, but in the but he could gain sight eventually, maybe in the world to come. These are things that I have done. Esa in Kiva doesn't say I will do, but the things that I have done, things I've already done for Rabbi Akiva and his colleagues, which is sort of ironic because Moshe is privy to the reason for Parah Adama, but what he wants to understand why Rabbi Akiva and his colleagues are punished by the Romans and they're killed in a very cruel and brutal way. Kadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe, stay silent, this is what I've decided. So that's, again, that's the theological hook a little bit that that seems to be alluded here. But in fact, the Midrash goes on to say, there were things that were not revealed to Moshe that were revealed to Rabbi Akiva and his colleagues. So Choya Karata, I know, is that Rabbi Akiva Chavira. His eye sees every precious thing. The Gemara talks about how Rabbi Akiva in some ways he outdid Moshe and his ability to explain every stem in the Torah. And Moshe's in some ways he's attending Rabbi Akiva. He goes to see Rabbi Akiva's classroom, doesn't understand what's going on. So he's comforted when he's told when Rabbi Akiva says, "Oh, this goes back to this halacha of Moshe Mitzrayim." So. And Moshe hadn't heard it, but the fact that there's that continuity comforts him. But there were certain things that Rabbi Akiva discovered that that apparently were not revealed to that were not revealed to Moshe. The Midrash goes on to say, "Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina Ramza Shkol Paro B'Teilo V'Shelcha Kayam." So it was hinted that all the future red heifers will be annulled, but yours will remain. Rabbi Acha b'shem Rabbi Yosi bar Chanina Amar b'shash alav Moshe lemar. Moshe went up to heaven. Shemakol shakadosh baruch hu yoshev osik b'parsha Parah Aduma. Hashem was sitting and he was learning. What was he learning about? Learning about Parah Aduma. And he was saying halacha b'shem Omra Eliezer b'ni Amar egla b'chnata u'parabachtaim. So Hashem was learning the first Mishnah Masechet Parah. This is the language of the first Mishnah Masechet Parah. Amar Moshe l'fana Rabbi Moshe olam Hashem. You own the whole Torah, and you have to say what Rabbi Eliezer is saying. You have to say what's in the human Torah Baal Peh. So Hashem says to him, there's one righteous individual who will be in my world. He'll be the first person to discuss Parah Aduma. His name is Rabbi Eliezer. He's going to say this Mishnah Agla Bachata Parabachtaim. So Moshe says, "Ribon ha'olamim, mihi ratzon shei michalatzai. May it be that he should be one of my descendants." So Hashem says, "Chayecha shu michalatzecha. He will be one of your descendants." Hadahu dichtiv b'shem ha'achad Eliezer. Moshe had a son named Eliezer, and this Eliezer is connected back to Moshe's son Eliezer. But there's this continuity. There's this continuity with the fact that Moshe takes the first Parah Aduma. His was special, and it carries into the fact that Eliezer is going to have the ability to teach about Parah Aduma. Then the Midrash brings a story of a heretic who says, what's this ritual that you have, that this sort of sorcery that you bring a red heifer and you burn it, you bring it to ashes, and then you sprinkle it and then you're clean. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, have you ever become a little bit maddened? He said, "No, I haven't." So he says, "Well, maybe somebody else you've seen that's kind of a little crazy." So he said, "I have." So what did you do for him? And another rituals. And then Rabbi Yochanan says, "Listen to what you're saying." So likewise, when we bring Parah Aduma, we're trying to bring we're trying to remove Tuma from the world. We're trying to remove the unclean spirit, and then the Gentiles. And then Rabbi Yochanan's students say, Rabbeinu, lezeh dachita b'kana, lanu ma'atam. So it says, you gave this guy a reason, but what's really going on? Meaning, Rabbi Yochanan said whatever he said in order just to kind of get the guy away. But what's really going on? What's the real reason here? So he says to them, chayecham lo ha'met b'tameh, v'lo par metara, v'lo ma'y metarin. It's not really that a corpse causes tumah, and it's not the cow that's purifying, and it's not the water that's purifying. We can't really understand this except for the fact that really Hashem is behind it all. That's, I think, an important point to remember, that when it comes to rituals, it's not about the ritual, but it's about the fact that Hashem commanded something, and we're carrying out Hashem's will in doing it. The final thing I want to mention from this midrash, so the question comes, why are most korbanos either male or female? But this one can only be done with the female. Hara aduma, it's a female cow. Amar Rabbi Ibn Mashal Ma'ad Zavar Doma, Levet Shimcha Shetipin Patrin Shalma. You have the son of a maidservant who defiled, made the king's palace dirty. So the mother has to come and clean it up. The cow will come and will atone for the golden calf. And I think that really brings us back to the beginning of Midrashim here, that there's this idea here that the purpose of the Paraduma is to atone for Egel HaZahav, to atone for the golden calf, and that which B'nai Yisrael did, they brought impurity from the world. And what we see here is that, in fact, from the Egel HaZahav, which is something that was bad, comes the Paraduma, something that's pure. And that's really the whole, that's a lot of the message here. That one here, we can't really understand what's going on with the ritual Paraduma, which Baruch Hu decided it should be. And this is the mechanism that we use. But the whole ritual Paraduma, inherent in the fact that it comes to atone for Egel HaZahav, teaches us that from things that are perhaps impure, things that are not great about the world, something pure and something holy can be born from that. Wishing everyone a good week.